Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We have some breaking news from the Supreme Court right now. They have just declined to resolve the constitutionality of the National Security Agency's bulk telephone metadata surveillance program, which leaves intact what a lower court judge described as an almost Orwellian surveillance effort. So we'll get some quick reaction to that now and talk about what's in that Bush-era torture report that you might, maybe, possibly, probably not, get to read. The Senate Intelligence Committee, you may have heard, voted 11-3 on Thursday to release key parts of the secret report, criticizing the CIA's detention and interrogation practices after 9/11. This marks a formal end to the Senate panel's four-year investigation into the controversial practices. But how much of the report's 6,000 pages will see the light of day is still a big question. Karen Greenberg of the Fordham Center on National Security is here to discuss. Hi, Karen. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me back.
And let me put you right on the spot by throwing this breaking news at you first. And just from what I'm going to describe of it, from what's breaking on the wire, see what you can tell me. And I'll say again, the Supreme Court declined this morning, according to the AP, to resolve the constitutionality of the National Security Agency's bulk telephone metadata surveillance program. This is, of course, what Edward Snowden revealed, leaving intact what a lower court judge described as an almost Orwellian surveillance effort in which the metadata from every phone call to and from the United States is cataloged by U.S. spies. So what does this mean?
It means that I think it's a political move. I think they don't want to get involved in something that's going to have its own course within the Congress over the next 12-plus months. The appropriate part of the Patriot Act is going to be discussed in the next year, and it sunsets, I think, in June of 2015, so Congress is going to have to take this up pretty soon. So I think they just deferred to the political process. It's not surprising, but it's disappointing.
I think that's right. Similar analysis on the website Ars Technica, which says the High Court's inaction means the future of the phone surveillance program will most likely play itself out in the political theater before the judicial arena. And you're right, Section 215 of the Patriot Act, the stated provision allowing the bulk collection, expires June 1st, 2015. And I don't know, maybe if you're a Supreme Court justice, this kind of makes sense. I think they're usually looking for the minimal action to resolve a thorny political issue before jumping into the constitutionality of it, see if it plays itself out in kind of a subconstitutional way. But why are you disappointed with that?
I'm disappointed because it has been a long time when we've been discussing all of the powers of surveillance that have come up, whether they're the metadata or the content analysis. And it would be good to be able to cut to the chase and to say, look, these, as the lower court judge said, violate these processes, these programs, violate the Fourth Amendment, are unconstitutional, and we need to get back to business as usual. And the longer it plays out, the longer it stays in debate. And what we've learned in the national security field is that as things stay as programs, as they don't get pushed back on in a way they need to legally, they persist and they don't go away. They just get nipped and tucked and they persist. And so it would have been nice to have some clarity, some leadership, and some courage on the part of the Supreme Court, and they didn't want to do that.
And sometimes they do lead and step out front, like they did decide to take that big Affordable Care Act case on the constitutionality of the individual mandate and so forth before the law went into effect. But here the metadata debate has really exploded into public view for more than a year, and still nothing. But I wonder if you think that this is in any way a tacit endorsement of that lower court ruling. Because if the Supreme Court declines to take something, then the lower court ruling rules, right? So if that lower court ruling criticized the program, calling it Orwellian and questioning the constitutionality, where does that actually leave it?
It'll go through the regular processes on appeal. They wanted to skip a stage by going directly to the Supreme Court. My guess is it'll go through the regular stages. But no, it doesn't feel to me, and we'll see how other people weigh in on this who may know more, on the inside, but it doesn't really feel like that is what the Supreme Court did. And as opposed to the bravery of the Affordable Care Act, when it comes to national security, the Supreme Court is very shy about pushing back on what the administration has embraced one way or another. So it's just national security just has its own rationale.
All right. Supreme Court declining this morning to resolve the constitutionality of the NSA's bulk telephone metadata surveillance program, as we're hearing from Karen Greenberg of the Fordham Center on National Security. It will have to go through at least one more level of appeals court before coming back to the Supreme Court for a Fourth Amendment ruling. And now to the topic we actually invited you on to talk about. Thank you for rolling so in such an informed way with the breaking news. But this Bush-era torture report from the Senate Intelligence Committee. I know people in your world have been watching this process for a long time. I remember you bringing up the existence of this report on the show at least a year ago when it was still secret. So why is this bubbling back up now?
Well, it's bubbling back up now because Dianne Feinstein has decided to take a very strong lead on this and to say, look, we spent however many, almost 2 years, researching the documents. We want to put this out for the conscience of the nation and to get the record straight. The reason it's so controversial is has many levels. The one that's captured most of the attention, I believe, is not the most important one, and that is the question of, did the enhanced interrogation program work when it came to getting information from detainees associated with Al-Qaeda? And that has basically been what the debate is about. But in recent weeks, two other themes have emerged, and they're rather important. One of them is whether or not the torture of Abu Zubaydah, the waterboarding of Abu Zubaydah, one of the detainees at Guantanamo, was done before the writing of the August 1st torture memo, August 1st, 2002. And the second one is whether or not there were techniques used that may not have been authorized by those later memos from the Justice Department. And the reason those things are important is the real question that seems to be at stake here is, was the program legally covered? We know it was after August 1st. That's what the administration, both administrations, have stood behind.
Why does that matter so much? If there were a few rogue interrogators, let's say, engaging in things like waterboarding before the administration gave them legal cover to do it, well, then they were just a few rogue interrogators. Isn't the much larger question the fact that the government of the United States, by order of the President of the United States, did clear interrogators for the future after August 1st, 2002, to engage in what much of the world considers torture?
Yes and no. On the matter of accountability, there is the issue of whether or not, and we don't know that these are just rogue actors. Nobody's saying that they weren't told to do this by higher-ups. They're just saying that they didn't have the legal authority, may not have had the legal authority to do it. And so the fact becomes, if there's going to be any kind of accountability, which I assume there will not be in any formal way, but it's illegal. And when you violate the law, you can be prosecuted for violating the law. And that's, therefore, it is at issue, and maybe it's just symbolic. And, yes, it's important to take the administration to task in a larger way. But just because we're not sure, just because it was one or two people doesn't mean it was rogue actors. It can be both one or two people and a program that has been authorized at higher levels. So, and so I think it opens a window into further study. The other thing about the report is, you know, it's going to be released with the redactions after it's been vetted by the CIA. That's the process right now among the people that will look at it to see what can be let out in what we think is a 500-page or so synopsis that the CIA will vet it. And that's problematic because they'll be told that, and they will claim that national security is the lens through which they view what can be released and what can't be. But how do we know that it's not wanting to hide what they've done? You know, it's 10 years since Abu Ghraib, 10 years this month. You would think that the American people deserved an accounting of what happened, how it happened. And if nobody's going to be held accountable, then the least we could get is the story of what happened.
And so Dianne Feinstein, chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, wants this out. But, of course, there is pushback to the possible release of the report. Yesterday on Fox News Sunday, Liz Cheney, daughter of the former Vice President Dick Cheney, very much involved, obviously, she now a pundit on Fox, questioned the report's integrity. Take a listen. This clip also includes a bit of crosstalk from host Chris Wallace and fellow panelist Juan Williams, but it is Liz Cheney's voice first.
But look, we've had, in terms of oversight, this program, when it began, back in 2002, 2003, when people like, say, David Rockefeller were involved, were chairman of the committee, vice chairman of the committee, ranking, they were briefed on the program. There's been oversight of this program. There have been
briefed them on the program.
Briefed on the program, briefed on the techniques. By the way, our own people were put through these techniques in the SEER program as they went through training. The program saved lives. We've now got a report that is written entirely by Democratic staffers. Nobody's saying we shouldn't have oversight, Juan, but you cannot say you have a report that's been selectively leaked, written entirely by Democratic staffers. If you want to have oversight of a program, you and I can both agree, you got to talk to the people that ran the program.
Liz, you don't understand.
You can't have a fair report.
Liz Cheney on Fox News Sunday with Juan Williams starting to protest her point of view there. But Karen Greenberg from the Fordham Center on National Security, what do you make of the heart of her criticism in that clip, which is this is a report written only by Democratic staffers, so it's political rather than informational?
You know, they looked at 6 million documents. They went through this as thoroughly as they could. This is based on documents, so it's not as if it's – it may be interview-free, but I think those documents revealed the heart of the program, especially after so many of the tapes were destroyed. What's really disturbing about what she just said, Liz Cheney just said, goes to the heart of what I was saying before about having this story. The idea that Americans – in power, associated with those in power, can get out there and say it's okay to torture people in the name of the country is not okay. And that is why this conversation has persisted to this day. I just don't understand why she wants to put herself in that place, because the thematic statement she's making under that is it worked, and therefore it kept us safe, and therefore it was an important program. Which is why the issue of whether it worked or didn't work is really beside the point. It may work. It may have worked. Whether it worked to keep us safe, whether the information, as FBI agent Ali Soufan has said, was already out there, that the FBI already had much of the information that the CIA alludes to that they got with enhanced interrogation, who knows? The question is, what kind of country do we want to be?
And she did say on that show yesterday, that it's not just a question of it worked. There were only three instances, she said, of people being waterboarded. One of them was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. The other one was, as you say, Abu Zubaydah. I don't know who the third one was. But these highest up al-Qaeda leaders who may have in that time shortly after 9/11 had information about other terrorist attacks that were being planned. How much do we say the values of our country are being destroyed when it's that limited and to those people in that situation?
Because it's not about waterboarding. This is a conversation about an entire program of abuse and cruelty that was done for whatever reasons in the name of national security. Among those reasons may have been revenge, may have been anger, who knows. But it was an entire program that set the tone for abuse, by the way, of Americans in custody, considered enemy combatants, as well as those abroad. And one of the things that Dianne Feinstein said when she made her statement about this report 2 weeks ago, revealing more than she had before, was that the brutality and the cruelty was much, much worse than we have been told. And so it does go to the point of who we want to be as a country. And the waterboarding is, yes, what we know of so far as the most egregious of the acts that were committed in the name of U.S. citizens and the country. But all of these other things are also cruel and wrong and illegal.
And as far as how many people were actually tortured, here's another clip. Former Bush-era CIA and NSA Director General Michael Hayden talking on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace about the current head of the Senate Intelligence Committee who wants this report out, Senator Dianne Feinstein. Chris Wallace speaks first.
But the report says that more prisoners were
abused than we had previously known, and that the enhanced interrogation produced little intelligence of significance.
Yeah, I read an article by David Ignatius earlier this week, and he said
he's a columnist for the Washington Post. Which
and he said that Senator Feinstein wanted a report so scathing that it would ensure that an un-American, brutal program of detention and interrogation would never again be considered or permitted. Now, that sentence, that motivation for the report, Chris, may show deep emotional feeling on the part of the senator, but I don't think it leads you to an objective report.
Deep emotional feeling on the part of the senator as opposed to an objective report. Karen Greenberg, I guess we have to reset our clocks of number of days since a man has attributed a powerful woman's opinions to her emotions.
Exactly. I mean, it was. I'm sure it's something he regrets having said in the circumstance. But the point is, everyone has emotions in this. It's not just the emotions of Dianne Feinstein. It's the emotions of everybody who has cared deeply about this issue on both sides of it, I might add. The government itself, Michael Hayden and others who embrace this program, are very passionate for the most part when they speak about it and how important it is for national security and how fear has driven us to this point. So I think there are emotions all around on this, and rather unfortunate that he chose to express it in that way towards a woman.
The new service McClatchy has some details of the report that they say they've obtained. And one interesting thing they mention is that critics inside the CIA were excluded from the debate over the programs or ignored. And this has been one of the big questions all along. So do you have any sense of how much dissent there was within the agency and how high that dissent went back then? You think there's anything big in that particular piece of string?
I think there were people inside that dissented. I think they probably went elsewhere. I think that was true throughout the government, that there were people that dissented within the Department of Justice, that were people that dissented when they heard about it within the general counsel's office of a number of the executive branch departments. But it's very interesting to me that the dissenters never thought to get together and mount their own opposition to this.
Meaning?
Meaning that they could have stopped. The dissent took the place of, don't tell me anymore. I don't want to hear about it. And nobody wanted to tell them anymore. They were excluded once they showed that they didn't want anything about it. But they should have been stronger, and they should have rallied their forces and not let this happen 12 years ago. And it's really a failure of statesmanship and leadership, much of it explained in the early days by the panic caused by the fact that the United States let down its intelligence guard, and et cetera, and was attacked on 9/11.
So where does this stand now? The committee voted under Feinstein's direction to declassify the report's executive summary and conclusions, which is 500 pages of a reported 6,200 pages. Is that a little or a lot, and what's the timeline going to be?
The timeline, we don't know, because the timeline, they'd like to see it very quick. The word they keep using is expeditious. It could be within a month. I think that's what some people have said. But my guess is, given that it has to go through a CIA vetting process and perhaps other intelligence agencies as well, that it's going to take quite some time. I think there will be tremendous pressure to do it quickly, however. So we'll see something. Yes, it will be valuable to see whatever it is. If it's just the executive summary and the conclusions, that's great. Whatever we see is fantastic. Whatever the country gets educated about and what happened in the past in their name, it's just a step forward.
And another tantalizing piece from the McClatchy report, that this report will say the CIA illegally detained 26 of its 119 captives shortly after 9/11. We will see what else comes out. Karen Greenberg from the Fordham Center on National Security, thank you so much as always.
Thanks again.